You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 23 April. We've got local inflation data due out at 10 a.m. this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Viv Govender, Rand Swiss. Trump is attacking Fed Chair Jerome Powell. What's the thinking here? Because he can't fire him, and Powell's got until May of next year. Fetchy Adams from TransUnion Africa, their latest credit survey. More South Africans are checking their reports. John Jack from Jaliti Corporate Real Estate, whether we are back at pre-pandemic levels yet, and is property an option for safety? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Former customer charges Absa with perjury and defamation, saying the bank misled the courts in attempting to repossess his late father's Roodepoort property. Business Day vaccine dispute could cut Aspen's earnings by 2 billion rand. A 5 o'clock sense. There will be a webcast this morning at 8. Details for that in the SENSE announcement. Morning markets. US was green, very green. S&P up 2.5%, NASDAQ up 2.6%. In the East, it is also green. Sydney up 0.1%, Tokyo 1.7% higher, Hong Kong 2.25% up, Tencent 3.4% higher. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, 3,348. Brent is your green at 67.72. Platinum is 961. Palladium, 930. The Rand is 18.59. Bitcoin, 92,900. Top 40 opening call, green open, 1,100 points or 1.33% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Viv Govender, Rand Swiss. Viv, appreciate the time today. President Trump trying to find the tweet for the Truth Social, essentially threatening Jerome Powell, saying that he is too Mr. Late, lowers interest rates now, otherwise his job is at threat. Now, firstly, to be clear, Trump can't fire him, although he could get him for technical reasons. His term expires May next year. What is Trump's play here? Is it as simple as just somebody else to blame?
Well, I mean, you say you can't fire him. This is one of the things that's just like untested. Yeah. It's like, what if the law enforcement arm of the government decides not to listen to what the courts say? What happens then? You know, and this is happening in the U.S. at the moment, you know, where they've like extradited people the courts say they shouldn't have done, which the administration says probably was a mistake. And they say, unfortunately, we can't do anything about it. And we're not going to try and do anything about it. So there's no result. Technically, I don't think you can fire Powell entirely from the Fed. Mm. But does he have to be this chair? Who knows? That is a gray area that I'm thinking that might be a possibility. You could have a new chair of the Fed. You know, Powell doesn't have to be the chair, even though he may just be one of the governors.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think governors are 12-year terms, and then the chair is appointed by the president from those governors. They get 4-year terms. Of course, Trump appointed him just under 7 years ago. Is this really, I mean, we've seen this before where leaders of countries are trying to control the central bank. They don't like the interest rates. They don't like the policies. But to be clear, the countries we're talking around are Turkey, are Zimbabwe.
Yeah. And I mean, even Turkey, people always think Turkey as if it's always been like a total basket case. I mean, Turkey is a very big country. Turkey is a very powerful country. It's overall, the size of its economy, its overall wealth level, it's far larger than South Africa. It's a much mm-hmm. more like, you know, big. But if you look at the Turkish lira, for instance, versus, you know, what you call this, the rand over the last few years, that basically is entirely due to the fact that, like you said, you know, the president basically decided that he doesn't like what the central bank is doing, and he wants his own kind of, you know, monetary policy that he wants to implement. Mm-hmm. And it's a case of what I call the confident incompetence. You know, more dangerous than a confident incompetent. Someone that doesn't know what they're doing, but is very confident about what they're doing. And that caused the real trouble that we are seeing right now. I mean, look at the lira from basically in the last decade or so versus Iran since then. We're talking about a weakening, you know, like, you know, 80-90% for just about 90% of the lira versus Iran in the last 10 years.
And that is to a degree what we're seeing. I mean, we are seeing, usually in terms of crisis, we see a strong dollar. What we are seeing is a weak dollar if we look at the DXY index. And to some degree, this might be what Trump wants. A weak dollar might fit his view as opposed to a strong dollar.
The person that had this, coined the best way of looking at this was Larry Summer. And he basically said that the U.S. markets are now behaving like a developing country. Because in a developed country, what happens normally is you have the market go down, you have bonds strengthen a bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that's the usual case, because they think, hey, the market goes down, that means interest rates are going to fall, it means blah, 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 go to safety, you go to their bonds. In a developing country, when the market falls, you don't want to be in their bonds either, because there's an overall crisis happening.
Yeah.
And the fact that the U.S. is now having that same situation where you have the bond market basically under pressure and you have the stock market under pressure, that indicates that the U.S. is behaving in a way in which the market isn't thinking this is a stable, like, you know, seesaw, that maybe one goes up, one comes down, kind of situation, where this is more of like a sinking ship where you just want to get off both sides.
Yeah. In fact, I was chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam last week around the tenure, and his view, and I imagine most people's view, is that it really is about watching that tenure. And again, when Trump was threatening Jerome Powell, we saw it weaken out almost to 4.5 again.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And look, I mean, the 10 years is not just a theoretical thing. Remember, because the U.S. has gotten so indebted over the last few years. And look, it's not just a Trump thing. Trump is, in a way, the right diagnostician for the wrong cure. But, you know, the fact of the matter is right now this year, the U.S. has $6 trillion coming due in debt. And that's going to be basically coming due at a higher interest rate. I mean, the $6 trillion alone at 4.5% is, you know, you can do the calculation. It's basically about $260 billion, you know, that you're looking at. And the fact of the matter is they have about $35 trillion, I think, in total. Mm-hmm. And you put like a 4% on that even, or like a 4.5% on that. You're looking at basically $1.2 to $1.5 trillion a year in interest rate payments. That dwarfs what the budget, for instance, Defense Department is in the U.S. And so there is a problem that has to be solved. Is the way to solve it basically destroying the world economy, or at least flipping the world economy and going on this tariff binge that they are at the moment? I'm not so sure.
Surely the way is the simple, good old-fashioned spend less, tax more, and there's no chance that's going to happen from, frankly, either party in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, no, look, and not just either party. Look, here's the thing with democracies, and this was known from the start. I mean, there's a reason that the Greeks thought democracy wasn't, they invented it, but they didn't keep it around, you know what I mean? Because they always knew that this was the case. Democracy comes down to counting, and eventually what happens, people realize that the people that basically vote, more of them take money from the government to contribute to it. Mm-hmm. And eventually you get to a point where you have a situation in which every democracy effectively starts skimming out more than they take in, and, you know, that becomes a problem. Usually there's growth, usually there's, like, you know, other things that keep them growing up and up. But if you look at almost any, you know, democracy in the world, there's been a clear trend line as larger and larger share of the GDP of the country goes towards the government. In Europe, you know, in some places it's 50%+ in places like France and so on.
Yeah.
You know, in the US it's not quite as bad, but the trend is definitely in one direction.
Yeah, to your point, in one direction. And yeah, the Greeks weren't completely convinced. We leave it there. We've governed around Swiss. Always appreciate the time.
Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Frederick Adams. He's head of credit risk solutions at TransUnion Africa. The latest TransUnion Q1 2025 Consumer Pulse study is out. Frederick, appreciate the time today. A lot of data in the latest report. I want to focus on the credit reports. And perhaps the important number is almost a third of South Africans are checking their credit reports on a monthly basis. This does show that they're, I suppose, aware of them, but also, more importantly, of the significance and the importance of a credit report.
Hey, Simon, thanks for having me. So, yeah, we're seeing an increase in the amount of people that are actually actively checking their credit reports. That number's increased, and we now have one in three people that are actually checking it. I think what's more important is that more than half of them are checking it with the intent of improving their credit score, which, as we know, a good credit score obviously gives you access to significantly more access to credit in the form of retail accounts, credit cards, loans, or even vehicle finance or home loans. So it's definitely a positive move in the right direction.
I want to come back to the benefits of it. But I mean, these days as well, I mean, I can remember, I mean, way back in the day, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, it was really hard to do. These days, I can check my credit score within my bank app. It has become markedly easier. And truthfully, I'm looking at it every month because it's that ease of access.
Yes, 100%. And it's because of this ease of access that we promoted widely, especially with the intent of us solve for the financial inclusion issue that we've got in South Africa, where more than 13 million consumers or customers don't have access to credit due to the lack of historical credit information. Mm-hmm. But what we've identified is that it's one thing to develop tools to give them access to credit and to financial services, but by not educating them on how to manage this access to credit or even manage the credit facility, you're actually doing the exact opposite, because not telling them or informing them of the importance of monthly payments on your accounts, you could set them up for a situation where they start missing payments and they now struggle to get access to future credit because of defaults in the past. So we find it as important to educate, and that's why financial literacy is such a big thing. And that's why, to your point, access to your credit report is becoming more widely available, because we need to ensure that we're setting individuals up for a fit financial future.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And then understanding, and to your point, if you miss payments, you see it immediately. It's that kind of feedback. You talk around, and credit score is important. It's how we can get loans. It's how we can potentially get better rates on our loans, T's and C's implies. What are some of the tips to sort of improve? I mean, I would imagine it's simple things like pay money back, you know, your loans back on time. Are there some other sort of nuance to things we can do to improve a credit report?
Yeah, and I think you touched on a very important point there. So ensuring that you're paying your accounts on time is probably the most important factor. Mm-hmm. Other things like ensuring that you're not making too many credit applications in a short period of time, that could also greatly impact your credit score, because that gives an indication of desperateness for finance, and it could give an indication that you're financially stressed at the moment. Another important one is how you utilize your credit. Just because I've got 10,000 and access to credit doesn't mean I should blow the full 10,000 rand, right? So making sure that you're managing your utilization of your credit well also goes a long way in ensuring that you've got a good credit score. I think it's important to remember that that credit score is how the credit industry views you. Yeah. And whenever you make an application for a credit, all lenders need to call the bureau to get a view of your credit worthiness before they can make a decline or an approval decision. So it's important to have a clean and healthy credit score.
Does something like, I have a mobile contract and that then gets debited every month. I have insurance premiums, that gets debited every month. It's not debt in the classic sense, but does that go towards my credit score?
Well, the main factors that go into your credit score, at least your bureau score, are mainly your credit product. Not every credit score is exactly the same, and some of them do consider things like your mobile phone debit orders and various other service products that get reported onto the bureau as well.
The last question is about fraud, and this is not the individual committing it, but it's one way you can spot potential fraud, I would imagine, because you could see, and you mentioned 10 applications in a short period, and you could think, hang on, I haven't made any applications, or maybe new accounts start appearing. This is an important aspect as well.
And that was actually one point that I was going to get to as well. And thank you for getting it. And so of the respondents of the survey, we found that about 30% of them are actually using the credit report to identify fraud. Because to my previous point, whenever you're making an application for credit, you get an inquiry on your credit report. So by regularly checking your credit report and identifying queries against your name that wasn't initiated by you, or potentially finding any kind of loans or retail accounts against your name that you didn't open, those are red flags for fraud, right? Because these fraudsters are working extremely hard to try and get innocent consumers' money, and they usually do that by taking over your identity and using your ID number to apply for credit at various institutes. So by using your credit report and checking it regularly, you could very early identify if there is any kind of activity happening on your profile that wasn't originated from you.
Yeah, and that's as important as a good credit score is. Perhaps it's even more important to not have any fraud activity in your name. We'll leave it there. It's Farki Adams, Head of Credit Risk Solutions, TransUnion Africa. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. How often do you check your credit score? It is a whole lot easier. It used to be almost impossible back in the day. These days, really simple. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with John Jack, CEO of Galletti Corporate Real Estate. John, appreciate the time. The commercial real estate industry, I want to dive down some rabbit holes, but before we do, we're sort of 5 years from the initial lockdowns and the like. Are you seeing sort of activity levels in terms of deals, vacancies, yield rates and the like? Are we back at pre-pandemic yet?
You've seen a lot of big moves. So basically, if you look at the Cape Town market, for example, that's just become call center city. They're just attracting call centers from all over the world, Spain, US, wherever it might be. South Africa is a new destination for call centers. I mean, look, we have always had call centers, but it's really on the rise. They've taken 150,000 square meters in the last couple of years, which is significant. So then that meant Cape Town was pretty much buttoned up. And of course, so many people had moved to Cape Town. So there was a net demand for office space anyway, you know, just businesses moving down there. And Johannesburg was left with this glut of office space. Then what happened in Johannesburg is you had a lot of residential or office to residential conversions happening. So the whole of Fredman Drive, if you go to Sandton, has been converted to residential. And that just takes out big chunks at a time, you know, 10,000, 15,000 square meters out of the market at a time. Boom, boom, boom. Just, you know, one after the other. And what's been left is the rest of the office space. And this has been taken up by people over the last couple of years because there's a definite sort of increased demand for office space for sure in Johannesburg. So I wouldn't say it's quite back to pre-pandemic because there were quite lofty rentals being achieved at that time.
Yeah.
But it's very strong. It's very strong.
You mentioned Cape Town up front, and that came to a point in a note you put out recently around sort of regional markets. And my first thought when I saw that point was, it depends perhaps on what that region is, what the municipality. Cape Town, look, it's beautiful. We love it. But it's a well-run city. There are perhaps some cities less well-run, which I imagine are less attractive. Or put it the other way, the better run a city, the better attractiveness it has.
Oh, absolutely. And then you've got in Cape Town, they actively pursue businesses. So they're very pro-business. They actively pursue policies and targeting businesses to come and set up in the Western Cape. So, you know, you've got groups doing that. Whereas in Johannesburg, it's far less heightened on the agenda. And there's a lot of sort of bureaucracy in Johannesburg, really, which is what causes delays. And no one likes that. And that's been the problem in Johannesburg is you've got really failing infrastructure. And I mean, you know, you speak after all the rains we've had. We've had months of rains now. The holes in the roads becoming a real problem. And, you know, power supply, you know, we're one tier ahead of Cape Town. And so, yeah, it does affect business and it does affect sentiment.
Yeah.
And people vote with their feet. So, yeah, you're quite right in that statement.
You also mentioned, talked around a flight to stability. And I was thinking, I mean, it is turbulent times. I mean, we don't need to go into the details. Everyone out there understands that. And this isn't a pandemic or financial global crisis where we all head into US treasuries or Swiss treasuries, which are back at negative yields. But for business folks, there's an attraction to property, to commercial property in terms of a relatively stable yield and a physical net asset value underpinning it.
Yes, well, I think, you know, where we're seeing sort of the clever money at the moment is buying this yield that's available in Johannesburg. So what's happened is obviously you've had a sell-off in the rentals. So the rentals have dived into the sort of 2020 period and they've stabilized now and they're starting to grow. So, but of course, office was a category where everyone was very scared of getting to office because there's this big oversupply of office. But with going back to, you know, the office to residential conversions and, of course, the net take up at the same time, actually what's happening, if you look at the underlying numbers, is that office is certainly a fantastic investment in Johannesburg because you not only get yield, but you'll now start to see capital growth at the same time because rentals are going to start moving upward. And we've seen it on certain buildings where the funds are actually revising their rentals upwards and achieving the numbers. So if you're talking A grade and P grade, or, you know, we call it triple A grade properties in Johannesburg, it's a fantastic investment. And that we're seeing private investors dive into.
Is yield, I mean, obviously there's T's and C's. You mentioned the A grade, you mentioned triple A or P grade. Is yield almost the first point that you look at? I mean, a low yield building is just overpriced. It's just not worth it, almost regardless.
Yeah, well, the inverse actually. So low yield buildings are very expensive buildings. So it's signaling that there's no risk on the building, right?
Yeah.
If you look at a low yielding building, it's going to be, for example, Standard Bank. Let's say Standard Bank said, you know what, guys, we're going to sell this building up here in Rosebank. We're going to sign a 12-year lease, and it's going to be just a standard escalation lease and a triple net lease. I mean, that would achieve fantastic yields. But it's the riskier assets that are achieving the higher yields. But you've got this anomaly where you're achieving high yields in what is now becoming a less risky asset if you look at the underlying numbers. But you're still achieving higher yields because there's a sentiment towards office overall. One of the big Cape Town landlords said to me in 2020, he says, you know, John, the best investment you could make right now is office property in Cape Town, in the Cape Town market. And he was 100% on the money, 100% on the money. And it's the same now in Johannesburg, where I'm saying one of the best investments you could make at the moment is buying strong yield for an asset which is actually not that risky.
No, I take your point. I mean, it comes back to, you know, property. You've got that asset. I mean, there's some turbulent times. But we'll leave it there. John Jack, CEO, Galeta Corporate Real Estate. Appreciate the time.
And that's it for today. We're chatting with Petli Radenhuis yesterday. The energy trade there, the ETF is XOE. And in a low GDP world, Trump's support for oil and coal, is it over for energy stocks for now? Almost two-thirds said nope, there is more upside. The rest were saying, yeah, it is done. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.